MRAP Snack.
Welcome to September 15th. We are back with another snack. Today, we are diving into another one of our equity and medicine pieces. And this is really honing in on a critical skill that we all learned during our clinical years of medical school. And it's how to present a patient. Age, gender identity, past medical history, allergies, surgeries, all of those pieces. And one of the things that variably is incorporated into that presentation is a race identifier: white, black, Latinx. The incorporation of race into that patient presentation actually dates back to the 1940s. This hasn't always been in place, and the history is actually really interesting. So we've got Alden Landry back on to dive into this topic. Alden, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I'm loving the conversations we're having, and hopefully our audience is getting something out of this as well.
I hope they're having fun with this too, because I think it dives into these topics that we just aren't that familiar with. And this is one I definitely wasn't familiar with until you sent me a short article that you'd written with some colleagues on the topic: Guidelines on the Use of Race as Patient Identifiers in Clinical Presentations. This was published in the Journal of the National Medical Association just this year. And I want to start with the history. We mentioned it goes back to the 1940s. Why was this incorporated into our presentations at that time?
Well, before I get into the history, I just want to tell you where this actually came from. That's why I felt this was something we needed to discuss. We had a student come and do a visiting rotation with us because they wanted to impress our residency program. And they were doing a phenomenal job. But I noticed a pattern in that student's presentations. And he was identifying the race of some patients and not others. And I stopped and asked him why he was doing this after one of his presentations. And he said, "I don't know. That's just how I was taught to do so." And so I actually thought about this a little bit more on my own and sort of did some of my own research to figure out where this came from and why this medical student was doing it. But it was also something that I remember being taught variably by some attendings to do, but not others. And so I think it's a good discussion to have. But just to get to the history part that you were asking about, part of this is a history lesson. And then also part of this is understanding how we get caught up in doing things based off a tradition without really knowing the roots of those decisions. So this isn't meant to be a political conversation, nor is it meant to really make people feel uncomfortable. It's really about explaining the roots of how we describe our patients in both verbal and written presentations. So there was a time in this country, not that long ago, where we had legal standards that allowed for separate but equal. These allowed for different standards, structures, and institutions for white people and what was considered quote-unquote colored people. This is Jim Crow. And Jim Crow was going on during World War II. And what happened after World War II is a lot of soldiers were returning to the U.S. after serving overseas, and they needed medical care. And it was also determined that we just overall needed a better healthcare infrastructure for not just the veterans who are returning, but also our general population. And so Congress got involved, as well as President Truman. And over a series of investigations, they developed some laws. And the law that we're going to talk about is called the Hospital Survey and Construction Act, which is actually more commonly known as the Hill-Burton Act. And it called for the construction of hospitals and health-related facilities and was really designed to provide federal grants and guaranteed loans to improve the physical plant of the nation's hospital system. Now, it's important to note that when they were building these hospitals, they were not allowed to discriminate based on race, color, national origin, or creed. However, and this is the interesting part, they were allowed to build separate but equal facilities in the same area. And so you may be wondering, well, how does this actually tie into Jim Crow and to how we present our patients? Well, the two sponsoring senators for this bill was a gentleman named Senator Burton, who was from Ohio, and the other is Senator Hill, who was from Alabama. And in Alabama during the 1940s, separate but equal reigned supreme. It was a thing, right? It was, you had the colored water fountains, you had the colored entrance to spaces. Black people were not allowed to sit at the same restaurants as white people. This was the standard in the South. And so by introducing this into the bill, it meant that hospitals could build a space for white patients and a space for Black patients. And I guess the big notable example for us in medicine, because it's still around today, is Grady Memorial Hospital. And so if you look at Grady Hospital and all of its grandeur and all of its history, you see that it's actually built in two towers. And historically, one of those towers was for white patients and the other was for Black patients. And so how does this tie into racial descriptors? Well, what was used as part of the admitting process was that patient one-liner. And so a 55-year-old white male presenting to the hospital was admitted to one part of the hospital, whereas a 55-year-old black male presenting with that exact same complaint was admitted to the other side of the hospital. And so we used the one-liner to decide where patients belonged in the hospital and who could be admitted and who couldn't. Now we're in a space where separate but equal has been struck down. There was another court case called Simpkins versus Cone Hospital, and other civil rights legislation that really just dismantled the concept of separate but equal. But what's interesting to note is that if you talk to people from Atlanta, especially those older generations, they still refer to Grady Memorial Hospital as the Grady's, as in plural, because that's a nod to separate but equal. And so I just want to note that, you know, as doctors do this when they are writing their notes and we're talking about patients, it's not to assume that those physicians are presenting that information because of their own bias, but it's actually just a remnant of racism in America and also in our healthcare system.
I think that remnant is what we really want to focus on. This is something that came, I mean, it was pragmatic at that time. Obviously, we don't agree with separate but equal, but at that time, the physicians saw this as a pragmatic approach when they're dispoing their patients to the hospital of where they're going to go. But we don't need that pragmatic approach anymore because that doesn't exist. We don't have our patients going to one tower or the other, one part of the hospital or the other, based on race or color or gender. It just doesn't happen. So we really need to get away from that idea. And separate but equal, in theory at least, does not exist anymore. But this is still taught. So why is this information there and does it belong there at all?
I personally don't think there's any reason to continue to include it in the presentation in that one liner. And I think, unfortunately, adding race to the patient descriptor oftentimes leads to some unconscious bias that does exist in medicine, or as we go through our own internal algorithms on deciding what a patient will need and sort of the type of care that they're going to require, their need for pain medication, and even things like where patients may get placed in the emergency department for care, whether it's hallway versus a room with monitors. Some of that may come into play as we see those indicators that are not necessarily needed, but still put in there. And so I think that if you go back and actually look at when race is included, it is oftentimes when describing non-white patients. And so just going back to that story about told you about the medical student, he would present the race when it was a non-white patient. So he would tell me it was a, you know, 87-year-old black female presenting to the emergency department for confusion, or a 45-year-old Asian male coming in with abdominal pain. But when he was presenting a white patient, he did not include the race. So I think that's interesting, right? And so what's essentially happening in those situations is that describing a patient by their race means that the white race is the default in every other patient, whether they're black or Latinx or Asian American, are categorized as the other. And I think it's really important to think about it from this perspective. If it's important to include for the black patient, why not the white patient?
Your article gets into a number of issues, not just the unconscious bias that's there, but other issues with starting with that race right up front. There's a lot of nuances in there. So can you get into a couple of those other points in the article?
Sure. And, you know, as you know, I'm not a geneticist, nor am I an anthropologist, but I do firmly believe that race is a social construct. And once we recognize that race is a social construct, we have to realize that there are many reasons why it should not be included in the patient's descriptor, but may actually be better served to be put in another place where we include other social history and information about the patient. We have a whole section on social history. As we dive more into conversations around race and we put it in a social understanding, we could think about our patients and their prior experiences interacting with the healthcare system, the bias that they may have faced, and whatever other social ties there may be when it comes to care for patients. So I think the social history is actually the ideal location for us to include a patient's race. But I think one of the things that is probably more important in the discussion is that we have to think about where we're getting this information from. I think it's really concerning because oftentimes we identify the patient's race based off of our assumptions and not how the patient truly identifies themselves. Oftentimes we assume that we know the race of the patient without actually asking them. And in this day where we are collecting all kinds of data around our patients, if we truly feel like collecting race is important, it should be self-identified. Most places are better at doing so now because there's opportunities when it comes to funding, support, and infrastructure, especially from the IT expanses that are happening. But there's also some legal requirements that make it so that hospitals must collect this information. And so we need to make sure that when we use race, we are doing it from a self-identified perspective, meaning the patient has contributed this part of that information to their medical records, and then really think about where it belongs and putting that in the social history.
In our prior pieces, we've looked at structural racism in medicine and the disparities that it creates. How does using the race identifiers in presentations tie together with those structural issues?
You know, at some point, most of us have taken an implicit bias test. And I think there's something to be said about this type of testing and how it shaped the way we think about how we feel about those who are put in those other categories in medicine. Teasing out racism in medicine is actually kind of difficult, especially in large volume studies, because oftentimes racism is more of an interpersonal experience. That said, what we find in medicine is that when we are having conversations around racism, bias, mistreatment, we see that in aggregate, Black patients have delays in things that we should be thinking about as higher standards of care, such as door to EKG times, or minority patients less likely to receive pain medications, or there are differences in referral patterns to specialists upon discharge to the emergency department. So if you look at the problem as a whole, when you are including race in a patient's initial presentation to the emergency department and potentially the many downstream effects that can impact the care that a patient receives, not just in the emergency department, but really what goes beyond their interactions with the ED.
Summary.
So the couple of things that I take away from all this, Alden, is that we should be asking the patient how they identify from a racial perspective. And then that information, it's not that it doesn't belong anywhere. It might belong in the social piece, but it doesn't belong up front. And especially because if it's the third or fourth thing that we say, the third or fourth word that comes out of our mouths in that presentation, it might be triggering some of our unconscious bias. It might be pushing patients in different directions and pushing them away from certain things that we want to try to avoid. Is that kind of what we're getting at here?
That's exactly my point. I think that, is it necessary? Probably not. I would say no, but others will try and find reasons why they think it's important. But the reality is it doesn't belong up front. We don't need to be using this to describe our patients. And we really should be putting it in a social history where it truly fits, because race is a social construct.
As you stated, there's a number of structural issues here that this brings up. And for medical students and residents in general, they're going to mimic what they see. You talked about this medical student that you had, and he said pretty plainly, the reason I do it is because it was what I was taught. And if we see it on rounds or in exams, then we are going to do that. We are going to mimic that behavior. We like to kind of try to tie these pieces together with what we can do to change this. This one seems kind of obvious, but I still think it needs to be stated. What can we do to change this?
And you know, this is really simple. I think we just need to remove race from the patient identifiers. And we, as the practicing physicians, the attendings that are helping to supervise our trainees and our medical students, we have to remove this from our lexicon and from the way that we approach patients. You know, after I wrote this article, I actually got some feedback from other medical students who were admonished because they didn't include race in the patient descriptor. And so the first thing that the student did was they printed out this article and handed it to the attending. And so it took some education for that attending to really have an understanding on why this approach is not appropriate. And we should adopt a standard in medical education and in our institutions, really, to just remove race from the one-liners and make sure we are including self-identified race as a part of the social history where it belongs.
It's fantastic. I think this is a nice thing at the end for us to say, okay, here's the information, here's the data, here's the history. Now here's what we can do when we go to practice. And especially if we are teaching younger generations how we can express them better, the right way to present patients so that we aren't unleashing these unconscious biases with our patients. And I think one of the other things in there that maybe we underplayed a little bit, but is important, is asking the patient how they self-identify from a racial perspective, because we're not going to know. And we shouldn't assume that we know either by the patient's appearance, by their last name. It just doesn't help. We really have to ask the patients that identity if we want to have accurate information and if we think that information is important in our evaluation of the patient. I think if we do that, we can get to a better place with this. And again, understanding the history of where this came from is critically important. Alden, thanks so much for sharing this with us. And the article, of course, we will drop a link to that in the show notes so people can check it out. It's a short piece, but I think it really does give us a lot of historical context of where this came from.
Hey, thanks for having me, and I hope the listeners enjoyed.